You're listening to The Rabbit Hole with Eric Ramos, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Eric Ramos. I'm your host here on The Rabbit Hole podcast. Welcome. So let's get right into it. Being a native Angeleno, you know I'm a hardcore Lakers fan, so we're going to cover Lakers news here. And being a martial artist with a background in Wing Chun, Hapkido, and boxing, you just know I can't help but to cover combat sports as well. And last but not least, having several paranormal experiences throughout my life, you just know I can't help but to do a deep dive into the paranormal and other fringe topics. So let's dive right in. Now let's start with our Lakers. Lakers just acquired a new head coach, J.J. Redick. For some of you longtime NBA fans, you may remember him. He played with the Lakers for a few seasons for about 4 years. And he is an excellent three-point shooter and free throw shooter. So he has multiple records at Duke, and he's still one of their all-time leading scorers. And he played 15 seasons in the NBA. And so I'm excited to see what he's going to bring to the team with his winning mindset. And, you know, he's pretty well-versed when it comes to defense and perimeter penetration. So I'm excited to see what he's going to bring to the table. Lakers also drafted Dalton Connect, and I'm excited. I'm really excited about this kid. He's a self-proclaimed gym rat, and I kind of have the feeling he has the Mamba mentality. He's 6'6", pretty tall, 213 pounds, 23-year-old shooting guard. So he spent some years in college, so he's not really going to hit the floor as a complete novice. So I'm excited to see what he brings to the table. He also won multiple awards for his accomplishments at the collegiate level, so I'm excited to see what this kid's going to do. And last but not least, LeBron James' son, Bronny James, was drafted to the Lakers in the 55th pick. He's 6'2", 210 pounds, 19 years old, so I'm assuming he's probably going to be either at the point guard or the shooting guard, probably more than likely at the point guard position. He played 1 year at USC. So I'm excited to see what he's going to do with his dad there. He's probably going to come off the bench. So I'm excited to see how he's going to mesh with them. And, you know, according to Bleacher's reports, Chris Haynes, there's rumors floating around that LeBron might be willing to take a salary cut if it does help the Lakers unlock the full level exception to use certain free agents as targets. So I think he's not getting any younger, and Father Time gets all of us. So I'm thinking LeBron is aware that he has 1 to 2 years left of peak performance. So I don't think it's far-fetched that he would be willing to take a salary cut to get some high-level players there so he can win a title there with his son. So I'm excited to see what happens there. And as a hardcore Lakers fan, I'm glad to be part of that history, to see the first father-son duel in the NBA. So I'm excited about that, and I think it's going to be an exciting season. I'm not going to get my hopes up expecting a championship, but, you know, whether we get one or not, I know it's going to be fun to watch those guys. I'm excited to see how they mesh, you know, LeBron, his son, this new Connect kid, and of course we have AD. I don't know if he's going to stay with us or not, but it's going to be exciting to see, you know, how they play and how they mesh together. And moving on to combat sports, there was a scintillating bantamweight matchup this past Saturday between Jesse Bam Rodriguez and living legend and future Hall of Famer Juan El Gallo Francisco Estrada. And Rodriguez, you know, he did win seventh round KO. Good back and forth, you know, fight. High level boxing match. They were brawling, but it was a skilled brawl. It wasn't, you know, guys just swinging back and forth, you know, just taking hits. There was some skill there. There was defense. There was a high ring IQ being demonstrated by both fighters. And you know, the legend, he did put forth, the legend Estrada, of course, he did put forth a valiant effort. He floored Rodriguez in the fourth round, and that was the first time Rodriguez ever hit the canvas. But, you know, he bounced back. You know, youth prevailed in the end, and he ended up getting a seventh round knockout. So if you guys want to check that fight out, there are some highlights on YouTube. You can just type in the YouTube browser, Jesse Rodriguez versus Juan Estrada, and you'll be able to see the highlights there. Great fight, great matchup. And then another good fight we had, Teofimo Lopez, the takeover at the junior welterweight division in the 140-pound. And he fought against Mr. Flaggett. It was a 12-round decision. And it wasn't one of Teofimo's best performances. But my assessment of it was, I think Teofimo took that fight because he took it as a stay busy fight, A. And B, he wanted to, you know, make sure that he was fighting a high-level opponent so he doesn't get rusty. And so I think, you know, that's, you know, what happened there. The other thing, too, is it was Teofimo moving up to the 140-pound division. I mean, he's been there for a while, but he came up from 135. And, you know, you're starting to see that at the 140 division, if you have someone that's, you know, walking you down and they're able to take your punches, it's going to be a long night. And, you know, some of the blows that he would lay guys out at 135, it's not the same at 140. So, but he did get the win. And, you know, and he won, you know, it wasn't a controversial decision. It was a clear victory for him. But he's calling out Terrence Crawford at 154. So, you know, he's having a hard time knocking guys out at 140. And so he wants to jump up two weight classes to 154 to fight an undisputed champion there. Terrence Crawford was undisputed at 135, undisputed at 140, undisputed at 147. So if he wants to jump up that way, and all power to him, you know, I give him his credit for chasing greatness. We can't knock him. You know, we have, you know, we criticize guys for not taking fights. So when a guy does want to take those hard fights, it doesn't make sense to want to criticize him. So, you know, I applaud him and his ambitions. But just a word of advice. I think that Mr. Teofimo, I think what he should do is focus on unifying at 140 first. Because I think that in the process of that, he's going to acquire whatever necessary skills he may need that's going to serve him well in his fight with Terrence Crawford at 154, if that happens. Because if you're getting walked down by a guy at 140 and you can't knock him out, what's going to happen at 154? Now, of course, you know, styles make fights, and Crawford's not the guy to walk you down. You know, he's more of a boxer puncher, kind of like you know, he's not going to run from you. I mean, if he needed to run, he can. But he's kind of like in the middle. He can box you. He can go toe to toe with you. But he's not the guy that's going to walk you down. So I think I can see skill wise why Teofimo feels that he can hang with Crawford. But I think he needs to get more. He needs to fill in more to 140. Get filled into the weight. Let your body adjust to 140. Unify. Go to 147. Take some fights there. Let your body adjust to that weight. And it doesn't have to be forever, but just go through the steps. But don't skip the steps. If you want to go through the steps faster, fine. But just, you know, just my advice, if he takes it, if he even knows I exist. But don't skip the steps. Go through the steps. You may want to go through them faster than normal because you feel you're special, you have the skill. Okay, fine. But at least go through those steps and give your body a chance to adjust to the weight. And then let's move on to MMA. So we have a new UFC star hitting the forefront now, Alex Pereira, and he's the guy that some of you may know, Israel Adesanya. Some call him Izzy. This guy Alex, he beat Israel Adesanya. He beat him. And when they were fighting at, I think it was either in another league, it was before they came to UFC, but he beat him a few times there. And he followed Israel to MMA, to UFC, and their first matchup I believe he lost, and then Israel got his run back and won. So Izzy's the only guy to beat Alex, but Alex has been hitting the UFC by storm. He just beat this guy, Jiří Procházka, I think it's Procházka, and wow, he got a spectacular second round knockout with a high kick to the head, and he even broke his toe. And then he knocked this guy down with a high kick to the head. The guy fell. He hit him a few times. The ref stopped it. So Alex walks to the corner and then pops his toe back into place. This guy is a true warrior. So he's one of the UFC's blooming stars. You want to follow this guy. You can even look that fight up on YouTube. So it's Alex Pereira versus Jiří Procházka. It's spelled Procházka. And it's an interesting, you know, entertaining fight, second round knockout. So have fun with that. Now we have there's a new sport coming to the forefront recently called bare knuckle. And you know, bare knuckle has its history in England. They would, you know, even in the U.S. And they would fight without boxing gloves. Many matches, many rounds. And in the early 1800s, early 1900s, late 1800s, and then they started, they added gloves to it, and so that's where we have boxing now. But recently, you know, they've legalized bare knuckle in certain states, and now it's legal in California, so it's gaining popularity very fast. And one of the reasons is because with boxing gloves, you know, your face is not going to get cut as fast as compared to when you're not wearing gloves at all. So when you're wearing gloves, you're taking those blows, and it doesn't look like you're getting a lot of damage. So the fight, if the ref doesn't really see you taking too much damage, and if you're still coherent, the fight could continue. And this is what can cause even more concussions. But with bare knuckle, there's nothing to protect your hands. So in the face, you're going to get cut a lot faster. So a lot of times those fights are stopped early because of the cuts and lacerations before they even get a concussion. So on the surface, it might look like the optics, bare knuckle is more dangerous, more brutal than boxing. But in truth, you have a higher risk of getting a concussion in a boxing match as opposed to a bare knuckle match. So bare knuckle is starting to really gain popularity and gain some traction. The most popular version of it is called the BKFC, Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship. You can look them up on YouTube. They have there's a lot of entertaining fights there. They show a lot of fights for free. There's like hours, 3 to 4 hours in footage, and you can watch that. So far, that's the most popular one. That's the one gaining traction. Recently, Conor McGregor, he's part owner of it now, and you may have heard of the upcoming boxing match between Jake Paul and Mike Tyson. And Mike Tyson, I think something happened with him on the plane. I don't know exactly what the health issues were, but he had some health issues on the plane. He was on a flight somewhere, and he had some health issues, and for whatever reason, they postponed the fight between him and Jake Paul. So the date was already set. The venue was already set. Jake Paul was ready, so they had to find a fill-in. And guess who they found for the fill-in? An ex-MMA fighter by the name of Mike Perry, who transitioned to bare knuckle, the BKFC, and he's one of the champions. He's actually the champion, the title holder, at I believe that's the 185-pound version of the title there. And he's going to cross over to a boxing match and fill in for Mike Tyson and fight Jake Paul at a 200, I believe the weight is 200 pounds, so that's heavyweight. And that's going to be an interesting matchup. I'm excited to see what happens there. I mean, Jake Paul is, you know, a pure, his focus is on boxing. So boxing is a very technical sport. There's a lot of nuances to boxing, a lot of subtleties to it. It's not something you can just jump into and master overnight. So in that regard, Jake Paul is probably going to have an edge. But you can't write off Perry because he has that toughness. He has that it factor. You know, he came from UFC, so he's well versed in making adjustments. And I mean, he's been in there with some tough guys in the bare knuckle matches. So if Jake Paul beats him, it's not going to be for lack of toughness on Mike Perry's part. It's just, if anything, it's probably going to be technique wise. But if it comes down to just toughness, I'm gonna have to go with Mike Perry. But again, you know, when it comes to boxing, anything can happen. One punch can change anything. You know, you're in boxing, they always say the punch that knocks you out is the one you don't see. So, and I've been following Jake Paul. He has been acquiring some skills of the sweet science. So that's going to be an interesting matchup there. And when it comes to toughness, that I have to say, that is a good dress rehearsal. That is a good warm up. Preparing him for the great Iron Mike Tyson, because you know Mike, he's coming in there to Mike's coming in there to knock off some heads. I mean, when he fought, I don't know if you guys saw the fight when he fought Roy Jones, he couldn't even go easy on old Roy. So I doubt very seriously he's going to go easy on Jake Paul. So I'm excited to see how that fight unfolds whenever that happens eventually. I'm assuming it's going to happen, take place sometime next year. And the fight with the Jake Paul and Mike Perry, I believe that's going to be in November. I'm not sure. I'll have to get, actually, you know what? Let's look that up. Let's look up the date. All right, so let's see. Is there even a date yet? It might be sooner than we think. Let's see. Oh, wow. Yeah, it's right around the corner. July 20th. So they're going to be fighting July 20th. Let's see. July 20th on DAZN at Amalie Arena in Tampa Bay, Florida. Okay. All right. Yeah, I'm going to check that out. I know Jake Paul gets a lot of hate, and I understand why. I get it. But what I like about what Jake Paul is doing is he's bypassing all of the politics in boxing. And, on the outside looking in, we can tell that, yes, there's politics in boxing. But unless you've actually participated in amateur boxing or professional or both, you won't know to the extent that politics interfere with the level of talent that the world gets to see. And, having boxed amateur myself, I can attest, I can tell you very surely, there's a lot of politics there. And I'm not going to go into detail now. Maybe at another podcast I'll go into detail. But I did go through a lot of politics. It interfered with a lot in the amateur boxing. And so I applaud Mr. Paul for bypassing all of that and still getting the bag. It's that's the karma for all of the unnecessary politics that takes place in amateur and professional boxing. And had all that, all those politics not taken place, then perhaps we would have even more talent to witness and enjoy in the boxing profession as we know it today. So transitioning now to fringe topics and the paranormal. You know, we... You know, I had a few paranormal experiences myself. I don't do drugs. Let me preface it by saying that. Because they're going to say, well, were you high? Were you on mushrooms? So I don't do drugs. I might drink a little bit here and there. Maybe some herb every now and then. Not every day. I don't condemn it. It's not a big deal. I just can't do it every day because I'm busy. I have a lot to do, so I can't afford to be in a lethargic state because it's going to interfere with my productivity. So, nothing against it. I'm not knocking anyone who does it. I don't have time to really do it as much as I would like. So, one night, I'm sure you've all there's someone there that has experienced sleep paralysis before. And one time I was experiencing that. I had sleep paralysis. And I couldn't move. And I'm just moving around. And this was, I lived in a studio in Buena Park by myself at the time. And I was, it's something, it's weird because it's like you wake up, but you're still asleep. It's like you wake up, but you're still asleep. So you're in a deep sleep, and then something happens, and you arise from the deep sleep, and you're conscious that you're sleeping, but you can wake up if you want to. But if you choose to stay sleeping, you can choose to stay sleeping and continue sleeping. So that's the state of sleep that I was at, if that makes sense to you guys. And I was trying to open my eyes, and I couldn't. And I was trying to move. And I couldn't. And I don't know. I was just like fighting it. And then I finally just somehow broke out of it. And I was on a I had a futon. And you know how the futons are. You fold it up just like the couch, right? But I folded it down into the bed. And then the wall, the way I was laying, the wall was to my left. And so I broke out of the sleep paralysis. And then I finally, got my eyes open. I was like, oh man, what the heck was that? And so when I looked to my left at the wall, it looked like a portal. Now, someone might say, okay, a portal. Well, can you be more specific? Because I know when I hear people describe these things, I'm like, well, can you be more specific? Can you give me some details? So here's what it looked like. I don't know if anyone's ever seen the show SG-1. And the way when they're about to walk through the, they have a stargate, and it's like a circle, right? They have like the metal circle, like an O shape, and then in the middle it's like black water, it's like water that's black, that's like a moving like in a whirlpool motion. That's what it looked like. So I looked at the wall. I'm like, what the heck is that? So then it's funny because if I tell someone this story, first thing that they're going to ask, right? They're going to say, well, were you drunk? Or were you smoking anything? Well, did you try? Were you doing drugs that day? Were you hungover? And that's the first thing I started asking myself. So I look over and I see like this whirlpool of dark water on my wall, and I'm thinking, did I do anything? Did I do any drugs? Am I hungover? And no, it was a work day, so I'm not even gonna. If I have to go to work the next day, I'm not drinking. I don't want to go to work hungover. So, and I answered my own questions. I was like, okay, no. All right, so whatever I'm witnessing, this is legitimate, so I'm looking at it, right? And this is around 2000. This is like the year 2008, either toward the end of 2007, beginning of 2008. And I look over at it, and at the time, I was very religious at this time. And I look over at it. And I just started praying. I'm like, I rebuke you in the name of Jesus. And I started praying, and then I looked. I would close my eyes. I would start praying, saying, I rebuke you in the name of Jesus. And I opened my eyes and I looked, and it was still there. And it was rotating counterclockwise. It was reverberating. It was vibrating, rotating counterclockwise. And I started praying, and after like two or three times, I looked, and then finally it was gone. I was like, oh, thank God. What the heck was that? So it's funny because, you know, I still believe in a creator. I still believe in a creator. I believe that the universe was created, and I believe that the universe has a beginning, and now science has come to the conclusion that the universe does have a beginning. And so I haven't lost, actually, let me put it this way. I believe that the universe was created and that there was a creator, that there is a creator. I'll leave it at that. And so I'm wondering now, I'm like, well, what would have happened if I would have walked through that portal? Would I have come up missing? Would they be saying, yeah, you know, gentleman, Brenna Park, one of the residents, all his items are there. There's no sign of him leaving the apartment, but he's gone. Or, now when I look back, I think, you know, I wish I would have, I should have, you know, maybe I should have grabbed some quarters or coins and tossed it through. Or even if we had drones at the time, fly a drone through there to see what it sees. But at any rate, I know it was real. It wasn't my imagination. And so to this day, you know, that makes me wonder, you know, what's out there? You know, it makes me question the nature of our universe. It makes me question the nature of our existence. There's more to this world than mainstream academics want us to believe. There's more to this world than the government wants us to believe. And of course, not all members of government, but there's some members of government where, for whatever reasons, they're aware of certain aspects of our reality that we're not aware of at the civilian level. And for various reasons, some known, some unknown, they don't want us to be aware of those realities. And as much as they try to shelter the civilian population from those realities will still inevitably bleed over into our lives. And we will see them and experience them and wonder, what is it? What is that? And so that's just one of my experiences. I'll share with you another. There's many more, but I'll share those other ones for another day and time. There was another experience I had where, again, and I don't know what's the connection with the sleep paralysis thing, but this other experience I'm about to share was also preceded by sleep paralysis. And similar incident. And again, it was a work day. I had to go to work the next day. And again, I was in a deep sleep and I couldn't move. And it felt like there was something on my chest, or was it my stomach? Yeah, it was like on my whole chest, stomach area. And if I wanted to try to get up, I couldn't. Something was holding me down there. And then something was holding my right arm down, and something was holding my left arm down. So I'm trying to get up, and I can't. I try to move my arm, my right arm, I can't. I try to move my left arm, and I can't. And I'm trying to pray, and I can't. imagine that. I'm sure for some people, they would be terrified, right? I can't move. I can't talk. I can't pray. So, and I was about to start praying, actually. And this was recently. This was, around 2017. And this is where I had, and yeah, 2017, I couldn't move my arm, my right arm, my left arm. I couldn't move my torso. I couldn't move that part of my body. And I was going to start praying. And then I don't know why I was thinking this, but just a thought came. Man, I'm tired of always praying. when I have these weird experiences. I'm no scared little coward. I don't know why I had these thoughts. I was like, I'm no scared coward. I can fight this myself. So I started fighting it, and I think I got my right arm. Yeah, I got my right arm free first, and I was just like Incredible Hulk, right? Like with your anger, and I got my right arm free, and then I got my left arm free. Okay, so I felt stronger. I got my arms free, and then finally I just forced my chest area up, and I was like, okay. Weak cowards, why do you always mess with people when they're asleep? That's what I was thinking. So I got up, and I was free. I got up. The paralysis was gone. So I stood up, and I remember it was late at night. It was like 2:30, 2:45 in the morning. And so I stood up. I'm leaving the bedroom. I'm about to go to the kitchen, get some water. And when I'm walking toward the kitchen, I see something from the corner of my eye. And what I see from the, I look to see what is that? You know, you see from your peripheral, you might see some movement or a figure, right? So I'm walking, I get up from the bed, I'm walking, I'm exiting the bedroom, I'm about to go to the kitchen area. And to my right, I see something. So I look, and it's me. And it's my body. I'm laying there on the bed asleep. So I'm laying down, I'm laying on the bed, I'm sleeping, and I'm looking at that. So for a moment, I almost panicked because I started thinking, am I dead? Did I die? So before I started panicking, I just told myself, well, let me go see if I can get in my body first and pick it up, you know, like clothes. Let me get in, or like a suit. Let me see if I can jump back in the body suit first before I start panicking. On whether or not I'm dead. So I went back to the body, and I'm walking. I'm not floating. I mean, at least I think I was walking. Who knows? Maybe if someone had a camera, they see this thing floating. I don't know. But I thought I felt like I was walking. So I walked back to my body. I laid in it. I laid back down in it, and then I got up. And then it felt like I was in it. And then I looked back at the bed, and then I didn't see anyone. So I was like, okay, all right, perfect. I'm in my body. Okay, thank God. Okay, that means I didn't die. So then I went and got some water. I wrote it down in my journal because I keep track of my dreams and night experiences. So I wrote in my journal, don't forget that you left your body. Because, you know, sometimes when I have weird experiences like that, if I don't write them down, I might forget. And then months later, years later, something might happen or a conversation triggers the event. And I'm like, oh, wait, wow, I remember this and that happened. So I didn't want to forget that. So I wrote down, remember you left your body. So in the morning, I woke up, and sure enough, I had forgotten that that happened. But I remembered I was supposed to look at my journal. So I woke up, I looked in there, I said, oh, wow, okay, yeah, this happened. So these two experiences here, seeing the portal appear in the wall, there was nothing I was doing. I wasn't trying to do any rituals or anything. And then I wasn't on any drugs. Same thing when I left the body. I mean, unless when... Now, here's another thing I was thinking. Who knows? Maybe that house where I saw that apartment where I saw the portal. Who knows? Maybe someone that lived there before me, maybe they were doing some ritual magic or something, some dark magic. Who knows? Maybe they were doing something like that there. I don't know. But I know I wasn't doing it. So there was nothing I did that should have caused that portal to appear in my wall. But it appeared, though. So between that experience and leaving my body, I know those things are real. I was out of my body. So out-of-body experiences are real. And before, prior to 2017, I would hear people talk about those things, right? But because I had never experienced it myself, or because I've never witnessed it, I never saw footage of it at that time of people leaving their body. As far as I was concerned, when I would hear it, I could accept what they're saying and believe it, but I wouldn't know myself from firsthand experience. But now, having left the body myself, now I know from experience, from firsthand experience, I can attest to you that, yes, we can leave our body. We can separate. That is a real thing. So that's what sparked my my interest in paranormal phenomena. Now, I've experienced it before that. I've encountered it before that, but because of the way our society has us conditioned, when we have those experiences, we tend to be dismissive. We don't do a deep dive. We don't make an effort to unearth those specifics or to do a deep dive into those details. We dismiss it. But since those experiences I've had, I don't do that anymore. So when I encounter some paranormal phenomenon, or if I witness it, I see some footage, forensic evidence, and I'll do the deep dive into that, into those experiences. I want to know. I mean, everyone's different, you know. To each his own. But for me, I'm curious about the world that we live in. I want to know the nature of our reality. I don't just want to coast through here and leave ignorant. As I pass through this realm, I want to acquire some information and some knowledge, and I want to leave better than I was when I arrived. I want to leave wiser and more knowledgeable than I was when I came. So when I experience things that don't make sense, don't line up with the worldview that was force-fed down my throat, I want to make sense of it and expand my worldview to be as close to reality as possible. And so with those experiences that I had, that's why I'm curious about these things. Now, there was another experience I had when I was 4 years old. And if any of you, if any of the listeners, if you have any experience, any paranormal experiences that you had that you want to share, you can go to my Instagram page at The Last Adept, A-D as in David, E-P as in Paul, T, The Last Adept on Instagram. And you can add me, follow me, you can message me. And yeah, we can reach out and I can have you on as a guest, or I can share your experiences here, because we need to raise awareness for these things. Ignoring it is not going to make it go away. So it's about time that we share our experiences. We try to come to a consensus of what all of this is. And, you know, I'm curious, you know, what is it? Well, you know, science, you know, they're able to, we're only able to, or actually, let's put it this way. With the five senses that we have, sight, smell, taste, hearing, touch, we can only interface with a limited range of all the phenomena that's out there. We can only interface with a limited range of reality. We can only see a limited range of light. So there's a huge world out there that we can't even interface with. So we don't know to what degree those things that we can't interface with impacts our world today. So for me, I'm just very curious of those things. And then there was another time I was four. I was with my mom. This was right after my mom and dad separated. I lived with my mom a brief time shortly before my dad got custody of me from her. And I remember she wanted me to go to the kitchen to get something for her out of the refrigerator or something out of the cabinet. I don't remember the details, but I remember she wanted me to get something out of the kitchen for her. And when I went into the kitchen, I saw like this yellow blob thing. I don't know if any of you remember the character Gumby. If you want to Google it, Gumby, G-U-M-B-Y. But it looked like Gumby, except instead of it being green, it was yellow. And instead of the face looking friendly, it looked mean. So I'm walking into the kitchen, you know, happy-go-lucky, going on about my day. And when I walk in, I see this yellow blob thing extending from the corner of the ceiling. So it's like it's in the ceiling, It's like the legs are in the ceiling, and it's extending out from the ceiling with the hands extending toward me like it's trying to fly and reach out and stretch like Plastic Man. And it started reaching out toward me from the ceiling. And I was like, Mom, there's something in there. Mom, there's a monster in the kitchen. Like, we all hear kids say stuff like that, right? But parents, I want to advise you. Don't be so quick to dismiss things that children see. And it's extending from the ceiling, and it's extending in an angle down toward me with the hands stretched out like that. And I was like, Mom, there's something in there. And then as I'm running from the kitchen, she's coming in there to see what it was. So as she's coming in the kitchen, I ran into her, but I saw my face was like in her stomach when I'm running out. And then she goes, "What is it?" And I'm just holding on to her with my face buried in her stomach. I was like, "Mom, there's a monster in there. It's trying to get me." But she didn't see anything. So, ever since then, that was the last time I had seen anything, with the exception of the other experiences that I shared with you. So that right there, my friends, those three experiences there are one of the main reasons why I've always been fascinated with the paranormal. And speaking of the paranormal, some of you may be aware of this, some of you maybe not, but there's been some whistleblowers from government employees that are whistleblowers, and they're sharing information, and they testified at Congress under oath with penalty of perjury that the U.S. has salvaged non-human biologics from UFO crash sites. Non-human biologics. Biological entities that weren't of human origin. And they testified under oath. Now, some of you hear it and there's no walls up. You're like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. Then there's going to be others that if you share that information with, they're going to run a critique. And, oh, yeah, I don't believe that. Okay. And then there's going to be others that want to say, oh, well, how do you know that they were telling the truth? Okay. All right. Well, you know that human testimony convicts people to the death penalty? So there's people on death row now, and the only way they got there was from eyewitness testimony. So the same level of evidence, this eyewitness testimony, that some of the critiques of the information I just shared, who are so quick to dismiss it, just also be aware that that same kind of evidence is enough to convict someone to the death penalty. Eyewitness testimony. Now, that doesn't mean that it's not flawless. You know, it's susceptible to human error. But just know, human testimony does qualify, or I'm sorry, eyewitness testimony does qualify as evidence in a court of law. And it has convicted people. The result of eyewitness testimony has resulted in the conviction of people receiving life sentences and death sentences. So there must be something to eyewitness testimony. So with that being said, these three whistleblowers, three military veterans, you can look it up, David Grush, I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, it's spelled Grusch. He's a former Air Force officer and intelligence official. And then there's Ryan Graves, a former Navy pilot. He's also a co-founder of Americans for Safe Aerospace. And then you have David Fravor, spelled Favor. And he's a former commanding naval officer. They all testified in front of Congress, giving sworn testimony about their personal experiences with unidentified aerial phenomenon, formerly referred to as UFOs. So, I don't know about you, but this is very serious for me. There's a lot of implications there, which we'll unpack shortly, and we'll unpack all of this info little by little over time, as all these podcasts continue, but each podcast I have a limited amount of time, so I won't be able to go into the full depth into every topic that I'd like. But over time, we'll be able to unpack all of it so that you all will be or feel thoroughly nourished, for lack of a better term. And so Congress, they actually passed a bill because of this. It's a bipartisan bill. That's also something to pay attention to. I mean, you've seen the news, how Democrats and Republicans are all at each other's throat over every little thing. But if they've agreed here, that should tell you something as well. They both agreed that this should happen. It's a bipartisan bill. And if you want to look this up, the bill is named the Safe Aerospace for Americans Act. Now, I'll say it again, the Safe Aerospace for Americans Act. And what it does is it ensures aviation employees can report UFO sightings and encounters without any fear of retaliation. And one of the whistleblowers even claimed that the U.S. government, they operated a secret multi-decade reverse engineering program of recovered vessels. And he also said that the U.S. recovered non-human biologics from these alleged crash sites. So, my friends, this was my first podcast here, and I just wanted to give you a brief overview of the kind of topics we're going to be covering. And I'm going to do a deep dive into all of these things, hence the name of the podcast, The Rabbit Hole. I'm going to go down different rabbit holes for you all. If there's a rabbit hole you want me to go down, send me a message and I'll do the deep dive and we'll come up with some things and see what we can come up with. And I'm really, really fascinated with that bill because something must have happened to make Congress feel that they needed to pass a bill to protect whistleblowers. Now, when they passed this bill, didn't really come as a surprise to me because I've been following this topic for many years already. And there's been many whistleblowers who tried to come clean and make their information public. And a lot of them were taken out. One of them, his name was William Cooper. He wrote a book called The White Horse. Or no, what was it? Let me see. I think it's Behold the Pale Horse. Let me see. I think. Yeah, William Cooper. Yeah, Behold the Pale Horse. Great book. Great read. If you're interested in these topics, and if you're at this podcast, I'm assuming you are, and I'm sure a lot of you listeners are probably already aware of it, but for those of you who aren't, it's a great read. It's an eye-opener. It's really actually I'm gonna read some of those chapters here for you guys. And he was a whistleblower. And what happened? Well, he's no longer with us, unfortunately. Rest in peace, Mr. Cooper, and my condolences to you and your family. And it was a while ago in the 90s, late 90s, and he had a lot of interesting information to share about this topic. And there's been multiple people over the years who've had information about this issue and attempted to come forward, and they were silenced. So when I heard about this bill that Congress passed, it's a huge game changer. One of the things there was another whistleblower. I don't remember his name, but I remember him saying something along the lines of they have to sign NDA agreements. And if they come clean and if they leak any of the information, you know, all of their pensions are forfeited. All of those things get forfeited. So this bill being passed definitely makes it a lot easier for these government employees to come forward and share this information with us. So we're coming towards the end of our time, my friends. Thank you for joining me at the Rabbit Hole Podcast. Follow me at The Last Add Up on Instagram, and there's more to come. And I look forward to sharing more information with you in the next podcast.
You're listening to The Rabbit Hole with Eric Ramos, only on LA Talk Radio.